Prologue. From Wild Times, An Oral History of the Post-War Years. By Studs Terkel, Pantheon, 1979. Herbert L. Cranston. Years later, when I saw Michael Rennie come out of that flying saucer in the day the Earth stood still, I leaned over to the wife and said, "Now that's the way an alien emissary ought to look." I've always suspected that it was Tachyon's arrival that gave them the idea for that picture. But you know how Hollywood changes things around. I was there, so I know how it really was. For starts, he came down in White Sands, not in Washington. He didn't have a robot, and we didn't shoot him. Considering what happened, maybe we should have, huh? His ship, well, it certainly wasn't a flying saucer, and it didn't look a damn thing like our captured V-2s or even the moon rockets on Werner's drawing boards. It violated every known law of aerodynamics, and Einstein's special relativity, too. He came down at night, his ship all covered with lights, the prettiest thing I ever saw. It set down plunk in the middle of the proving range, without rockets, propellers, rotors, or any visible means of propulsion whatsoever. The outer skin looked like it was coral, or some kind of porous rock, covered with whorls and spurs, like something you'd find in a limestone cavern or spot while deep sea diving. I was in the first jeep to reach it. By the time we got there, Tack was already outside. Michael Rennie, now, he looked right in that silvery blue spacesuit of his, but Tachyon looked like a cross between one of the Three Musketeers and some kind of circus performer. I don't mind telling you, all of us were pretty scared driving out. The rocketry boys and eggheads just as much as the GIs. I remembered that Mercury Theater broadcast back in 39, when Orson Welles fooled everybody into thinking that the Martians were invading New Jersey, and I couldn't help thinking maybe this time it was happening for real. But once the spotlights hit him, standing there in front of his ship, we all relaxed. He just wasn't scary. He was short, maybe 5'3", 5'4", and to tell the truth, he looked more scared than us. He was wearing these green tights with the boots built right into them, and this orangey shirt with lace sissy ruffles at the wrists and collar, and some kind of silvery brocade vest, real tight. His coat was a lemon-yellow number with a green cloak snapping around in the wind behind him and catching about his ankles. On top of his head, he had this wide-brimmed hat with a long red feather sticking out of it, except when I got closer, I saw it was really some weird spiky quill. His hair covered his shoulders. At first glance, I thought he was a girl. It was a peculiar sort of hair, too, red and shiny, like thin copper wire. I didn't know what to make of him, but I remember one of our Germans saying that he looked like a Frenchman. No sooner had we arrived than he came slogging right over to the jeep, bold as you please, trudging through the sand with a big bag stuck up under one arm. He started telling us his name, and he was still telling it to us while four other jeeps pulled up. He spoke better English than most of our Germans, despite having this weird accent. But it was hard to be sure at first when he spent 10 minutes telling us his name. I was the first human being to speak to him. That's God's truth. I don't care what anybody else tells you. It was me. I got out of the jeep and stuck out my hand and said, "Welcome to America." I started to introduce myself, but he interrupted me before I could get the words out. "Herb Cranston of Cape May, New Jersey," he said. "A rocket scientist. Excellent. I am a scientist myself." He didn't look like any scientist I'd ever known, but I made allowances since he came from outer space. I was more concerned about how he'd known my name. I asked him. He waved his ruffles in the air, impatient. "I read your mind. That's unimportant. Time is short, Cranston. Their ship broke up." I thought he looked more than a little sick when he said that. Sad, you know, hurting. But scared, too. And tired. Very tired. Then he started talking about this globe. That was the globe with the wild card virus, of course. Everyone knows that now. But back then, I didn't know what the hell he was going on about. It was lost, he said. He needed to get it back. And he hoped for all our sakes it was still intact. He wanted to talk to our top leaders. He must have read their names in my mind, because he named Werner and Einstein and the president. Except he called him "This President Harry S. Truman of yours." Then he climbed right into the back of the jeep and sat down. "Take me to them," he said. "At once." Professor Lyle Crawford Kent.
In a certain sense,
It was I who coined his name. His real name, of course, his alien patronymic was impossibly long. Several of us tried to shorten it, I recall, using this or that piece of it during our conferences, but evidently this was some sort of breach of etiquette on his home world, Takis. He continually corrected us, rather arrogantly, I might say, like an elderly pedant lecturing a pack of schoolboys. Well, we needed to call him something. The title came first. We might have called him Your Majesty or some such, since he claimed to be a prince. But Americans are not comfortable with that sort of bowing and scraping. He also said he was a physician, although not in our sense of the word, and it must be admitted that he did seem to know a good deal of genetics and biochemistry, which seemed to be his area of expertise. Most of our team held advanced degrees, and we addressed each other accordingly, and so it was only natural that we fell to calling him Doctor as well. The rocket scientists were obsessed with our visitor's ship, particularly with the theory of his faster-than-light propulsion system. Unfortunately, our Takisian friend had burned out his ship's interstellar drive in his haste to arrive here before those relatives of his, and in any case he adamantly refused to let any of us, civilian or military, inspect the inside of his craft. Werner and his Germans were reduced to questioning the alien about the drive, rather compulsively, I thought. As I understood it, theoretical physics and the technology of space travel were not disciplines in which our visitor was especially expert, so the answers he gave them were not very clear. But we did grasp that the drive made use of a hitherto unknown particle that traveled faster than light. The alien had a term for the particle, as unpronounceable as his name. Well, I had a certain grounding in classical Greek, like all educated men, and a flair for nomenclature, if I do say so myself. I was the one who devised the coinage tachyon. Somehow the GIs got things confused and began referring to our visitor as that tachyon fellow. The phrase caught on, and from there it was only a short step to Dr. Tachyon, the name by which he became generally known in the press. Colonel Edward Reed, U.S. Army Intelligence, retired.
You want me to say it, right? Every damned reporter I've ever talked to wants me to say it. All right, here it is. We made a mistake, and we paid for it, too. You know that afterwards they came within a hair of court-martialing all of us, the whole interrogation team. That's a fact. The hell of it is, I don't know how we could have been expected to do things any differently than we did. I was in charge of his interrogation, I ought to know. What did we really know about him? Nothing, except what he told us himself. The eggheads were treating him like baby Jesus, but military men have to be a little more cautious. If you want to understand, you have to put yourself in our shoes and remember how it was back then. His story was utterly preposterous, and he couldn't prove a single damn thing. Oh, okay. He landed in this funny-looking rocket plane, except it didn't have rockets. That was impressive. Maybe that plane of his did come from outer space, like he said. But maybe it didn't. Maybe it was one of those, secret projects the Nazis had been working on, left over from the war. They'd had jets at the end, you know, and those V-2s. And they were even working on the atomic bomb. Or maybe it was Russian, I don't know. If Tachyon had only let us examine his ship, our boys would have been able to figure out where it came from, I'm sure. But he wouldn't let anyone inside the damn thing, which struck me as more than a little suspicious. What was he trying to hide? He said he came from the planet Takis. I never heard of no goddamn planet Takis. Mars, Venus, Jupiter, sure. Even Mongo and Barsoom. But Takis? I called up a dozen top astronomers all around the country. Even one guy over in England. Where's the planet Takis? I asked them. There is no planet Takis, they told me. He was supposed to be an alien, right? We examined him. A complete physical, x-rays, a battery of psychological tests, the works. He tested human. Every which way we turned him, he came up human. No extra organs, no green blood. Five fingers, five toes, two balls, and one cock. The fucker was no different from you and me. He spoke English, for Christ's sakes. Oh, but get this, he also spoke German. And Russian, and French, and a few other languages I've forgotten. I made wire recordings of a couple of my sessions with him, and played them for a linguist who said the accent was Central European. And the head shrinkers, whoa, you should have heard their reports. Classic paranoid, they said. Megalomania, they said. Schizo, they said. All kinds of stuff. I mean, look, this guy claimed to be a prince from outer space with magic fucking powers who'd come here all alone to save our whole damned planet. Does that sound sane to you? And let me say something about those damned magic powers of his. I'll admit it, that was the thing that bothered me the most. I mean, not only could Tachyon tell you what you were thinking, he could look at you funny and make you jump up on your desk and drop your pants, whether you wanted to or not. I spent hours with him every day, and he convinced me. The thing was, my reports didn't convince the brass back east. Some kind of trick, they thought. He was hypnotizing us. He was reading our body posture, using psychology to make us think he read minds. They were gonna send out a stage hypnotist to figure out how he did it, but the shit hit the fan before they got around to it. He didn't ask much. All he wanted was a meeting with the president so he could mobilize the entire American military to search for some crashed rocket ship. Tachyon would be in command, of course. No one else was qualified. Our top scientists could be his assistants. He wanted radar and jets and submarines and bloodhounds and weird machines nobody had ever heard of. You name it, he wanted it. And he did not want to have to consult with anybody either. This guy dressed like a fag hairdresser, if you want the truth, but the way he gave orders, you would have thought he had 3 stars at least. And why? Oh, yeah. His story. That sure was great. On this planet Tachis, he said, a couple dozen big families ran the whole show, like royalty, except they all had magic powers, and they lorded it over everybody else who didn't have magic powers. These families spend most of their time feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. His particular bunch had a secret weapon they'd been working on for a couple of centuries. A tailored artificial virus designed to interact with the genetic makeup of the host organism, he said. He'd been part of the research team. Well, I was humoring him. What did this germ do? I asked him. Now get this. It did everything. What it was supposed to do, according to Tachyon, was goose up these mind powers of theirs. Maybe even give them some new powers, evolve them almost into gods, which would sure as hell give his kin the edge over the others. But it didn't always do that. Sometimes, yeah. Most often, it killed the test subjects. He went on and on about how deadly this stuff was, and managed to give me the creeps. What were the symptoms? I asked. We knew about germ weapons back in 46. Just in case he was telling the truth, I wanted us to know what to look for. He couldn't tell me the symptoms. There were all kinds of symptoms. Everybody had different symptoms, every single person. You ever hear of a germ worked like that? Not me. Then Tachyon said that sometimes it turned people into freaks instead of killing them. What kind of freaks? I asked. All kinds, he said. I admitted that it sounded pretty nasty, and asked him why his folks hadn't used this stuff on the other families. Because sometimes the virus worked, he said. It remade its victims, gave them powers. What kind of powers? All kinds of powers, naturally. So, they had this stuff. They didn't want to use it on their enemies, and maybe give them powers. They didn't want to use it on themselves and kill off half the family. They weren't about to forget about it. They decided to test it on us. Why us? Because we were genetically identical to Tachyzians, he said. The only such race they knew of.
and the bug was designed to work on the Takesian genotype. So, why were we so lucky? Some of his people thought it was parallel evolution. Others believed that Earth was a lost Takesian colony. He didn't know and didn't care. He did care about the experiment. Thought it was ignoble. He protested, he said, but they ignored him. The ship left, and Tachyon decided to stop them all by himself. He came after them in a smaller ship, burned out his damn Tachyon drive, getting here ahead of them. When he intercepted them, they told him to fuck off, even though he was family, and they had some kind of space battle. His ship was damaged, theirs was crippled, and they crashed. Somewhere back east, he said. He lost them on account of the damage to his ship, so he landed at White Sands, where he thought he could get help. I got down the whole story on my wire recorder. Afterwards, Army Intelligence contacted all sorts of experts, biochemists and doctors and germ warfare guys, you name it. An alien virus, we told them. Symptoms completely random and unpredictable. Impossible, they said. Utterly absurd. One of them gave me a whole lecture about how Earth germs could never affect Martians like in that H.G. Wells book, and Martian germs couldn't affect us either. Everybody agreed that this random symptom bit was a laugh. So what were we supposed to do? We all cracked jokes about the Martian flu and spaceman's fever. Somebody, I don't know who, called it the wild card virus in a report, and the rest of us picked up on the name. But nobody believed it for a second. It was a bad situation, and Tachyon just made it worse when he tried to escape. He almost pulled it off, but, like my old man always told me, almost only counts in horseshoes and grenades. The Pentagon had sent out their own man to question him, a bird colonel named Wayne, and Tachyon finally got fed up, I guess. He took control of Colonel Wayne, and together they just marched out of the building. Whenever they were challenged, Wayne snapped off the orders to let them pass, and rank does have its privileges. The cover story was that Wayne had orders to escort Tachyon back to Washington. They commandeered a jeep and got all the way back to the spaceship, but by then one of the sentries had checked with me, and my men were waiting for them, with direct orders to ignore anything Colonel Wayne might say. We took him back into custody and kept him there, under heavy guard. For all his magic powers, there wasn't much he could do about it. He could make one person do what he wanted. Maybe three or four if he tried real hard, but not all of us, and by then we were wise to his tricks. Maybe it was a bonehead maneuver, but his escape attempt did get him the date with Einstein he'd been badgering us for. The Pentagon kept telling us he was the world's greatest hypnotist, but I wasn't buying that anymore. And you should have heard what Colonel Wayne thought of the theory. The eggheads were getting agitated, too. Anyway, together, Wayne and I managed to wrangle authorization to fly the prisoner to Princeton. I figured a talk with Einstein couldn't do any harm, and might do some good. His ship was impounded, and we'd gotten all we were going to get from the man himself. Einstein was supposed to be the world's greatest brain. Maybe he could figure the guy out, right? There are still those who say that the military is to blame for everything that happened. But it's just not true. It's easy to be wise in hindsight, but I was there, and I'll maintain to my dying day that the steps we took were reasonable and prudent. The thing that really burns me is when they talk about how we did nothing to track down that damned globe with the wild card spores. Maybe we made a mistake, yeah, but we weren't stupid. We were covering our asses. Every damned military installation in the country got a directive to be on the lookout for a crashed spaceship that looks something like a seashell with running lights. Is it my fucking fault that none of them took it seriously? Give me credit for one thing, at least. When all hell broke loose, I had Tachyon jetting back toward New York within 2 hours. I was in the seat behind him. The red-headed wimp cried half the fucking way across the country. Me? I prayed for Jet Boy.